Stephen St. John here with Jake Gutierrez. It's Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. We've had some great guests so far. Jamie Bloom, a former Royals reliever, was in studio. Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com was just in studio, both for an hour. Day brings power. 9:30, we'll talk to Annie Rogers from MLB.com about the Royals. Right now, we're going to talk to a good friend of the show, Jeff Kerr from CBSSports.com. And, okay, I planned this because I told Jake, hey, please book Jeff Kerr. I didn't plan this, that he was going to come on the show from Philadelphia after an absolute 76ers meltdown against the Knicks. And based on Jeff's Twitter feed, perhaps Jeff melted down as well. And so Jeff, I feel bad. I was, you know, we marched on to talk about the draft and football, but we do have to address what the hell happened in that final minute of the 76ers. Can you please go over that with us? Thank you.
Everything I teach high school kids about inbounding the ball, NBA players can't do. It's kind of pathetic, honestly.
How about calling timeouts?
Well, yeah, that too. But so it's funny, on my private Instagram, I keep in mind I keep it private for a reason, but I put a standstill shot of Nurse, Batum, and Embiid calling timeout, and the rest looking right at Nurse.
Yeah, well.
And I circled it. And it wasn't called. I'm like, how are you an official at the highest level? I don't care how soft he calls the timeout. And Nurse even admitted he probably should have ran up more, but he ran up enough where, I mean, the timeout should have been granted. And, you know, Steven, you know how Twitter is, man. And you got Knicks fans saying this and Sixers fans saying this. I'm like, look, I'm just looking at it as a basketball fan. And then someone who coaches, that's got to be called. That's got to be granted. I don't care where the – and the worst part was in the standstill shot, Tyrese Maxey has the ball. So, I don't know. I still blame the Sixers for the loss. It's a very Sixer-esque loss. I'll just leave it at that. But So let's talk about teams that actually win football. How about the Chiefs?
Wow. Unbelievable. So Jeff Kerr, very angry. Are they do you think they can come back in the series, or is the series over?
No, I think it's over. I think if they would have won game two, I said they had to win one game in New York to win that series. I think they'll win game three. Not sure about game four, but I just don't see them winning. Maybe the grievance will help where they decide to say that, the refs have been atrocious to us the whole series. Again, I'm never one to blame the officials, but I will, as a basketball fan, it's amazing how the MVP of the league can't get a call, and Jalen Brunson, who is my favorite basketball player on the planet, gets every call in the book.
Well, Jeff, I'm sorry. Let's get to football so we can settle you down. Although the first question is about the Eagles, and that was not the type of finish we expected about halfway through the year when you and I were talking about a possible rematch between the Chiefs and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And look, the Chiefs, they had their struggles, but they turned things around, and they won a second championship in a row. The Eagles, I mean, really, after they came to Arrowhead and Nick Sirianni was screaming at Chiefs fans, things fell apart for them from that point on. So I'm just curious, what have they done in the offseason to try to fix things? You feel confident they will return to the level of Super Bowl contender, or are there real problems in Philly?
I think they will, but it's fair to say Nick Sirianni is on the hot sheet, right? When you fire your offense coordinator, and remember, he didn't do it. People above him did. Now, Nick still had the suggestion to do it. I like Brian Johnson and Washington. I'll just go off on a little tangent there. I think that's a good fit for him, but I do like them bringing in Kellen Moore. Vic Fangio was always the guy they wanted to be defensive coordinator anyway. It just didn't happen last year. But they were able to get him in, and they haven't revamped the defense, which they probably should have done. But they've brought in better pieces. They brought in bigger edge rushers like Bryce Huff. They traded Hassan Reddick, which I'm really not a fan of. I thought they should have kept Reddick if you're in the Super Bowl window, but they're banking on a lot of their young guys, like Jalen Cole, Jordan Davis. They got some nice young cornerbacks. The best thing Eagles have done this offseason was extend their core guys, like Landon Dickerson, Devonta Smith. Signing Saquon Barkley was a big move for them. I really like that move, him behind their offensive line. But if you lose a guy like Jason Kelce, that's brutal, too. And so you'll like this, Steven. There have been people telling me this, and again, these aren't insiders or anything like that, but they're like, oh, I could see Jason Kelce coming back to play for the Chiefs. Like, and I'm like, so where's he going to play? Because last time I checked, the Chiefs got the guy who's going to be the all-pro center this year.
Yeah, you know, I don't. The only weird scenario would be if they traded Trey Smith and moved Creed Humphrey to guard and brought in Kelce. I don't think that'll happen. There are some people that have suggested that maybe because he had trouble snapping the ball last year, but it was, you know, I've been told it was because of a hand injury. But look, they and the way the guard market blew up, they have to make a choice between Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, most people believe. And I think a lot of people think it's going to be Creed Humphrey, which sucks. I really like Trey Smith, but Trey Smith's going to be too much money for them to keep both. But now, look, who knows? We heard the same things, too. Kelce's going to come to Kansas City. Kelce's going to go to a TV studio and make a bunch of money, I think.
Yeah, same here. And look, I think if the Kelce's were to ever be reunited again, it's going to be on television. I personally don't think they're going to play together. But I'll tell you what, it was very sad when I was one of the people invited to Jason's retirement ceremony, and just seeing Trav just ball out like he was, and like he was trying so much to hide it. And it was tough to watch him, man. Like, I'm like, oh, man, I can't watch Trav right now. I can't. Like, he's about to lose it.
So how do they replace Kelce? Your Kelce.
Well, Kelce basically handpicked his replacement 2 years ago. Sam Juergens, he drafted from Nebraska, and they really liked him as a center. He got tried by fire as a guard last year, and he wasn't banned, but he's a natural center. And Jason's really spoke highly about him. Jeff Stoutland, Eagles offensive line coach, just spoke really highly about him. Now it's who's going to be their right guard. Tyler Steen, who they drafted in the third round last year, is a favorite for that, but they could go interior lineman in the draft. They would find some way to get Troy Fontenot from Washington. I think that'd be a tremendous pick for them. I personally think they're going to go edge rusher in this draft. Again, this draft is going to determine if they can get some impact players at 22, 50, and 53. I'll be on board in saying they're a Super Bowl contender again. I still think San Fran and Detroit are ahead of them, but the Eagles aren't far off, and I think this draft can shore up a lot of needs.
Okay, so what's the better route for you? Because I've seen, like, as you mentioned, they've got a couple of second-round picks to go along with their first-round pick. They got number 22 overall, and then in the second round they got 50 and 53. I've seen a bunch of mock drafts having them move up from 22 into the top 15 and maybe using one of those second-round picks to go up and get a dynamic player, while others have suggested, hey, they just need to stand pat because they could use all three of those picks on players. What would you rather see them do? Would you like to see them be aggressive and move up in the first round, or stand pat and hold on to those 2 second-round picks?
So I think they are going to be aggressive, and I think they will trade up. There are a couple players I know that they like. And one is Leitu from UCLA. I think Howie Roseguy tipped his hand. He wants to get an edge rusher, and there's a couple of them I really like. Leitu from UCLA is one. Jared Verse from Florida, from Florida State. He's probably one of my favorite pass rushers in the draft. And there are certain teams that I think if he goes to, he's going to be an absolute stud. Eagles would be one. Jacksonville would be one. Who's the other player? Chop Robinson from Penn State, which they could probably get if they stayed at 22. But I think they like Terrion Arnold from Alabama. I think they like Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, the cornerbacks. They could go cornerback early because they do need to address that. But keeping those 2 second-round picks would be massive, too, because they need a linebacker in the worst way. N'Kobe Dean, you just don't know what he's got. They signed Devin White, which outside of 2020 postseason, 2020 regular season, really hasn't done anything in the NFL, even though he's freakishly athletic. As you guys know, I mean, you guys saw Super Bowl 55. So besides that, yeah, I mean, they have a couple needs on defense. I'd like to see them get a third receiver as well, which they could use with their second-round pick. I mentioned right guard earlier. I mean, there's some holes to fill, but I truly expect them to trade up. And if they can get Leku or Arnold or Verse or one of those guys trading up, I think that'd be a good move.
All right, let me ask you maybe a question or two about the draft in general. We just had Jeff Chedia from NFL Network in studio, and we were talking about the quarterbacks. Number one, are you, along with everyone else, do you believe Caleb Williams is the best quarterback in the draft? And if you do, who do you think's right behind him? Who do you think's number two? Who should Washington take? What do you think of these quarterbacks that are at least expected to go in the first round?
I do think Williams is the best one. I just like his ability on the run. I'm not crazy about his demeanor, but he's got all the physical tools, and he's going to have all the weapons he needs to feed, and he might get more, which is kind of crazy because the Bears have the ninth pick, too. He already has a low wide receiver core, has a good running back group. I think the offensive line could use some work, but it's not like Williams, you know, is a statue back in the pocket. So I like Williams. Jaden Daniels, I like at number two. I think he's better than Bay. I think he's better than McCarthy, those guys. I think Washington would be foolish not to take him. I just really like the dual threat ability. I think he's got can of an arm. He's one of those guys that, you know, I'll be rooting for to succeed. I loved watching him at LSU last year for the little bit. I got to watch LSU. I was more than impressed with him. Three's tough. I kind of want to say it's Penix. I really do. But it all depends where these guys go. So if I'm going by talent, I think Penix is three. I love Drake May, the player. I don't know. I'm just not crazy where Drake May might end up in New England.
All right. We're talking to Jeff Kerr from CBSSports.com. And about 4 or 5 days ago, he had an interesting article about six veterans with uncertain futures who could impact the first round. And you took a look at some players that might be on the move via trade in conjunction with the draft. Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins, Patrick Surtain II, Daniel Jones, Cortland Sutton, Ryan Ramchuk. So who do you think is most likely to be involved in a trade leading up to the draft or during the draft? And do you think we'll see multiple big-time deals? What are you expecting?
I think we're going to see some deals. I'm still curious about what Denver's going to do with Patrick Surtain because he's such a phenomenal player, and there's so many teams that need cornerback help. And the Broncos, really, they need all the picks they can get. So, and they need to move up for a quarterback. I think they can find a way to keep 12. I doubt it's going to happen, but I think there's a way they could keep 12, trade Surtain, trade a couple of their later rapid or a future first, and move up to get the quarterback they want if they decide to do that. That's why I think Surtain's going to be on the block. The 49ers keep saying they want to keep Brandon Ayuk, but yeah, the Titans also said they wanted to keep A.J. Brown a couple years ago, and he got traded on draft night. So teams need receivers. Brandon Ayuk had his best year last year. He's a proven player. Wasn't that great in the Super Bowl, but he was great all season. So, I mean, I'm sure a team like Kansas State would take Brandon Ayuk, right?
Oh, boy. Well, Jake says no. I say, well, yes, they would, but what are we
doing? That money.
The money's a lot, but what kind of compensation would it take to get him, you think?
You know what? I think maybe a second-round pick. I'm trying to remember what picks the Chiefs have in the draft now.
They have a first and a second, 32 and 64, when you're talking about the premium picks.
They got seven picks. They have every round except for the sixth, and they have 2 fives.
Okay, that's it. So maybe a second and one of those fives would do it.
Jake? I mean, if you're trading for a guy like that, you're going to have to extend him. I mean, you're going to have to pay him. And I just don't believe in paying wide receivers quarterback money.
Mm-hmm. Eagles pay two of them, which is crazy.
Right.
But
they can do that. They can do that because they have their quarterback on a cheaper deal. You know, when you have Mahomes making $50 million, you just can't afford to do that.
Who do you? Okay, so go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, Hurts is going to be making $50 million too eventually. But I will say this though. The Chiefs could get a very good wide receiver at 32.
Yes.
I mean, I think Xavier Leggett's going to be there. I think Adonis Mitchell's going to be there. Worthy's going to be there. You know, they could potentially get Roman Wilson later, or if they trade up from 64. There's going to be some good receivers there. So it's not like they have to trade for a veteran wideout.
You're right. And, they added Hollywood Brown. We still have to wait to see what Rashee Rice's punishment is, but... you're absolutely right. They could add a good wide receiver at number 32 or even in the second round. Okay, so I asked you about quarterbacks. There's been talk about teams draft or moving up for quarterback. What team do you think is most likely, if you had to pick one team to bet on, that will move up to draft a quarterback, who is it?
So I had a scout tell me this, and someone from another front office tell me that. And it's funny, it's the same team and it's the same situation, but I keep hearing the Vikings. That's mm-hmm. going to be the team that's going to trade up, and they said the best quarterback in this draft might be whoever gets drafted by the Minnesota Vikings because of the talent that they have around them. And I'm
right.
like, you know what? It kind of makes sense. It really does. And if it's J.J. McCarthy, I'm not crazy about J.J. McCarthy, but I might believe in J.J. McCarthy a lot more if he's a Viking than, say, a Giant.
Best non-quarterback player in the draft?
Oh, Marvin Harrison. He probably should be the number one overall pick. If we just picked the best player in the draft, I think it's Marvin Harrison. I mean, the guy, look at what he did last year. Again, I watched a lot of Big Ten football. Ohio State had Dreck at quarterback, and this guy's just putting up number after number after number. What's he going to do with, say, a Kyler Murray throwing him the ball or Justin Herbert throwing him the ball? By the way, have you guys heard these crazy rumors going on around the internet that the Chargers might actually think of trading Justin Herbert?
Oh, I've seen people float that, but it doesn't make sense. But everyone's trying to put two and two together. Well, Harbaugh wants J.J. McCarthy, and so he wants to trade Herbert and bring his guy in that he was married to at Michigan and won a championship. Jake, what are you doing there?
No, I mean, I don't think they do that.
I don't know if it's buzz or people just like, oh, look at this. He has a chance to draft the guy that he just won a championship with. And so, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, the time to do it, trade with the Bears, get the number one overall in the ninth. I mean, that's the only way you – and maybe their next year won.
I don't know.
No, I don't.
That would be crazy. All right. Final question for you. Last night, the Chiefs announced that they signed Brett Veach and Andy Reid to extensions, and now several reports that Andy Reid is the highest paid coach in the NFL, and especially with Belichick gone, he should be, absolutely. Again, we're talking about a man that has just won back-to-back Super Bowl championships and three in the last 5 years. What are your thoughts now about where Andy Reid has put himself, signing the extension, quieting the people that suggested that maybe he's looking to step down, becoming the highest paid coach, and having a chance to make a run at a three-peat?
So, funny story about the whole Andy Reid retirement thing. I covered the AFC Championship game, and I know a couple players in that Chiefs locker room pretty well, and we were joking about that after the game. I'm like, oh, yeah, Coach, he's going to retire after you guys win the Super Bowl, right? And I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm like, you know him. He's a football lifer. I'm like, exactly. I'm like, I just can't see Andy Reid retiring as long as Patrick Mahomes is alive. So, again, it makes plenty of sense. He's going to what? He's 72 now, 2029. I mean, Andy Reid has a legit chance now to win the most games in NFL history, which I think that's why Bill Belichick wants to stick around. He knows Reed's coming for that record. And look, the Chiefs win 12 games every year. It doesn't seem to matter at this point. So you're winning 12 games a year. The next 6 years, that's 72 wins. He's already at over 250. He's going to be in striking distance for that. But yeah, I mean, I already listed Andy as the fourth greatest coach in NFL history when I did the rankings after the Super Bowl. And I said, it's only going to keep growing the more Super Bowls you get. Like, as long as he's got Patrick Mahomes healthy and upright, they have as good a chance as anybody to pull off the first three-peat since the mid-60s. And there's only one team that ever three-peat, and that's Green Bay, and they did it twice. One in the late 20s and one in the 60s. So, look, I always say this. I will never count out the Chiefs as long as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are on the same team. And I got a story for you guys. So on Christmas, I'm covering the Eagles and the Giants game, and I'm watching the Chiefs very closely before the game because I don't miss too many Chiefs games. And they lost, after they lost to Vegas, I'm like, they'll be all right. They'll be all right. They're fine. January is when their season begins. Eagles win the game on Christmas. They acted like they lost. And I'm like, oh, well, you guys are collapsing. The collapse is official now. Like, you guys are beaten. You're down. You're upset because you won a football game, which, frankly, I ain't get. So it's funny how their seasons both turned around. One went south, one went north, and I wasn't even in the Chiefs locker room. I was just looking at the body language on TV and on the sideline. I'm like, they'll be all right.
Yep. It's the way they handle adversity. They bounce back, and the rest is history. Hey, Jeff, it was great catching up with you. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you again next week after the draft. But I encourage everyone to go to Jeff Kerr CBS on Twitter. Follow all your work and everything you write at CBSSports.com. And I hope there is a buzzer-beating win for the 76ers in your future to make up for what happened last night. So go get them, Jeff.
I think Nate Bukady has a better chance of the Kansas City, a sporting Kansas City winning 10 in a row than the Sixers winning this year.
Wow. Well, shots fired at sporting Kansas City. Jeff, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Steven. I'll talk to you soon.
Now, see, don't you enjoy Jeff Kerr? Well, now you love him because he said Penix is the third best quarterback in the draft. Now you're strutting around. That's our kind of guy.
I like him.
He'll talk football all day long. That's what we like. That's Jeff Kerr from CBSSports.com. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. The Royals lost to the Blue Jays 5-3, now a very small losing streak. Three games in a row now they've lost. And to talk about the Royals, we have Andy Rogers from MLB.com. Follow her on X at Annie_Rogers is her handle. Andy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Unfortunately, the Royals lost their third in a row to the Blue Jays, but we did see Michael Garcia go deep with a two-run home run, and he has been struggling, but maybe that's something that could snap him out of it. It was good to see him get a hold of one and put it out of the park. Now, I know he spoke with members of the media after the game. What are your thoughts on Michael Garcia in that leadoff spot after a hot start, going through a cold stretch, and hopefully having something good happen to snap him out of it last night?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely give him some confidence. You could see the frustration set in for sure with him over that stretch here. We'll see how he responds. I was wondering if it was getting close to the time that the Royals might have to make a change in their lineup, but this could get him back on track. We'll see what happens, but definitely good to see that despite the overall result last night.
Somebody asked me this, and I didn't really have a good answer, so I'll ask you. And we're not expecting them to do it, but like you said, you at least wonder, I think a lot of people wonder, do they need to move him out of the leadoff spot, even if it's temporary, to get some pressure off of him? But if they did make a move there, who would be the candidate to replace him in the leadoff spot?
Yeah, that's the big question. I asked on, I think it was Friday, to open up the homestand. I asked a couple of people just to kind of get their thoughts. And, what I heard was, we're not panicking yet. It's still a small sample size. We still believe in Michael Garcia's bat, as you can see from yesterday. He has the power there. He has shown that he can get on base. He's definitely in a rut. So they definitely believe in him. But the other part of it is that there's not a ton of alternatives. You could put Bobby Witt Jr. up there at number one, but he loves hitting second in the lineup, and I don't think they want to mess with that. And then you look at some other people, and there's just not a lot of alternatives. You know, MJ Melendez is someone that's come up, but they really like him in the fifth spot, just because it gives some protection to Salvi at cleanup when MJ's going well, and you don't want to mess with the left-right order because, you know, the coaching staff has shown that that's what they like to do with the lineup now. So it's interesting. Not sure there is an alternative on the 26-man right now. We'll see, though, and hopefully it just becomes a moot point and Garcia gets going again, because when he is right, he is a good leadoff man. He sets the tone. He can hit for some power, you know, when that lineup turns over, but at least he can get on base, and he and Bobby up there are good to have on base when Vinny and Salvi come up.
And also, I mean, you would think that the best spot for him would be hitting in front of Bobby Witt Jr., having Witt protect him in the lineup to get him to see some good pitches to hit. And so maybe just leave him there and let him work his way out of it. It looks like that's what they're doing right now, and hopefully we saw a sign of that last night. So something else I was going to ask you about, we saw the Royals call up veteran reliever Tyler Duffy, who threw two innings last night. And they're able to do this because Jordan Lyles is on a specific type of the inactive list he tweeted out that opens up a 40-man spot. And so just maybe tell me about Tyler Duffy and how he can help the bullpen. And you think that Lyles might be out for a while, huh?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a pretty serious situation with Lyles. Not sure exactly what he's going through, other than it's been deemed a personal matter, so definitely send in thoughts and prayers to him as he handles whatever he's going through. In the meantime, the Royals did make a move. They had that 40-man spot open, so they brought up Duffy. He's a veteran guy who can throw strikes. He was someone they signed to a minor league deal, non-roster invited spring training. It would have been interesting. He was sidelined from most of spring training because of a melanoma diagnosis, which I wrote about back in spring. And so he had to take a significant amount of time off to get that handled. He was only coming back to throwing by the end of camp when we were breaking. So he did not make the team out of spring, which was expected. But it would have been interesting to see how they handled that situation if he had thrown all spring, because I think they like what he brings. So good that they're able to get, you know, he had some time in Omaha, got some innings under his belt. Now he's up, looked good yesterday, walked a couple of guys, but got out of it with the two scoreless innings. So that's good to see. It's nice to have that right-handed arm, especially against a team that has a ton of right-handers. With the Blue Jays, they don't pitch hit a lot either for those right-handed guys. So that's kind of their thinking behind that. And they like the presence that Duffy brings in the clubhouse. He's really he doesn't take anything too seriously, which is nice. And he's a good veteran guy for some of the younger guys to lean on out there at the bullpen. So good move, I think, especially knowing who they're facing. And we'll see how long he stays up. But I think it's something that they had to make, knowing that Wiles is going to be out for a little bit as he deals with whatever he's going through, and then get Anthony Veneziano optioned back down to Omaha after throwing back-to-back days.
So how do you sum up Brady Singer's start? You know, he had a couple of leadoff walks that hurt him. You know, the three-run triple to Bichette. I know there was a little bit of back and forth on Twitter whether or not Hampson should have or could have caught that ball. And then you also give up the home run to Varsho. So a couple of mistakes there. And like I said, the leadoff walks, but he goes six innings. And so what do you take away from Singer's start last night?
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, he gave up five runs on two swings, but those walks will kill you. You can't do that. You got to get out of those situations if you're walking guys. The Bichette triple is interesting. He took a down and away slider out to right center field, and that's a hard pitch to hit, a hard place to go with that pitch. But he that's what he does. I know he's been kind of struggling a little bit to start the season, but you know he's a guy who he can do damage pretty much instantly. So that was unfortunate. And then with the Hampson catch, I don't know if Kyle Isbell would have caught that. I have to imagine, you know, he would read it a little bit better just because he's so good out there with his reason routes. But Hampson's pretty fast. He almost got a glove on it. And it was really windy yet last night. So I don't know if the wind just carried the ball a little bit more or not. But regardless, it happened, and that's a really unfortunate spot to be in for Brady with, you know, giving up that bases clearing triple. So it's hard to evaluate it, but, you know, it still stands. Like, you can't walk that many, and the leadoff walks, they always seem to come around to score, and he knows that. It was good to see some of his velocity back up in the early part of the outing yesterday. I know that was some concern in his first couple of starts. So we'll see how he can continue that. But it's really just about, you know, being in the zone.
And to wrap it up, the importance of Michael Wacha tonight. You know, they bring in Wacha, they bring in Lugo, and this is one of the reasons, right, to have a starting pitcher you can depend upon to end losing streaks. It's only three games, but you don't want to get it to four. And Michael Wacha, it's a big spot for him to come in and put a halt to things to get the Royals back in the win column. Wacha against Gausman, good pitching matchup tonight, ain't he?
Really good pitching matchup. It'll be interesting to see how the offense handles Gausman. I think that's the bigger storyline right now than the pitching. They've had some iffy starts here in the last 3 days, but there's been a lot more that goes into these losses than just the starting pitching. So offense needs to get going again, needs to get these individual guys back to where they were at the beginning of the season. And then you put Michael Wacha out there. You hope he can end that losing streak. It'll be a fun game, and we'll see if the Royals can halt this at three. This is a big test. This is kind of how we determine how far have they come from last year. Can they stop these losing streaks early on rather than let them drag on?
Andy, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, I'll see you later.
That's Andy Rogers from MLB.com. Great job covering your Kansas City Royals. Back after this on WHB. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Todd Lebo was with me in the 6 o'clock hour. Jamie Bluma was with me in the 7 o'clock hour. Jeff Chedia was with me in the 8 o'clock hour. Jeff Kerr and Andy Rogers, they were with me in the 9 o'clock hour. Jake was with me all 4 hours. Hopefully you were with me for some of it. Clearly, they don't trust me to be alone. And they're probably right. I'll be back tomorrow. Everyone have a great day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Goodbye.